Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Faster Masters Rowing Radio, where having a rowing coach only makes you better. Following a program gives you a true pathway to becoming a confident rower who's respected by your peers. You can become the athlete you want to row with. I'm Rebecca Caro, and I'm joined by Marlene Royal.
Hello, Rebecca, and hello to our Faster Masters Rowing audience. Nice to be here.
It is very nice to be here. And it's been a pretty exciting week for me and for you. We were talking just offline how the end of our rigging webinar turned out to be just such an amazing thing all told. We had fabulous audience. We had fabulous expert guests. We had so many people who really enjoyed it and gave us just awesome feedback afterwards about what they'd learned. And I, for one, went out and remeasured my entire rig on the double.
I changed my oars too, actually.
I did try doing super, super short oars, and it was horrid. Didn't like it.
How short is super short for your oars?
So I have Dreher REX, so they're mm-hmm. a very small spoon, mm-hmm. and I went down to 281 centimeters and 87 inboard.
Oh, okay, that is quite short. Yes,
as far as they could go. I mean, they mm-hmm. couldn't go any. No, I adjusted the span a little. I did discover something interesting. You know, on a wing rigger, I have an aluminium wing, and it has a little slot, which is what your pin goes into, and you can move it. And I was looking at them and I was going, hang on a minute, this seat's asymmetric. The slot gap is wider on the left than on the right. We measured it and it wasn't. It just shows that actually the riggers are not made that accurately. I mean, it doesn't really matter so long as the pins are symmetrical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you have to measure. You have to measure things like that. You know, sometimes rigger holes can be drilled a little bit off. Something can be off. So, you know, it's good that you do measure that just to make that sure that your pins are equidistant from the center of the boat. That's the main thing.
Well, we did two different measurements. So three, actually. So we measured pin to pin, top of the pin and the bottom of the pin. So that was cool. Then we put the end of the tape measure under one slide and dragged mm-hmm. it diagonally across to the opposite pin so that it's from yep. one side of the boat to the opposite pin and then the other. We got those measurements. And we were measuring to the top of the pin for those measurements. And then we actually have an MPACA height stick that sits in your slide runners. And then you can extend the arm out one side, measure it, and then flip it over and do the other side.
Yeah, I changed my oars too, actually. So I'll say that's what I did. This besides getting lots of people ready for the head of the Charles and sending out last week's podcast we did with steering the head of the Charles with Mark Wilson and Jim Dietz, which was a great overview of how to go down the course. And but yeah, I changed mine too. I have Concept 2 smoothies, so I pulled them into 284, which is the shortest they can go. And I did give myself a little bit more inboard. I've been rowing with it, and it's actually felt really quite nice because I sort of felt I was a little bit heavy before. So I've mm-hmm. decided to play around, but I can't really go shorter than 284 is kind of the standard range on those oars. So I can't go shorter.
Yeah, I cut the slot in the handle. We just cut it out another sort of centimeter and a half just so that we could mm-hmm. shorten them, because I actually have two pairs of oars, one of which we've managed to shorten quite substantially. We bought them with shorter shafts. Here's the
it's
link.
If experimenting. You want, yes, exactly.
If you want to know the head of the Charles steering episode that we recorded last week with Jim Dietz and Mark Wilson from All American Rowing Camps, the URL is fastermastersrowing.com/head-of-the-Charles-steering-in-one-times. But if you just search for steering the head of the Charles, you will find it. And they are really good. It's absolutely detailed with visuals and video and stills and little arrows on the pictures pointing mm-hmm. out which scullers are in, you know, the wrong place or the right place. So, yeah. Charles, I want to know, what's the pot of Marmite for? Is that just to measure something to do with your span? Do you like Marmite, Marley?
I don't think I've ever even had it, to be honest with you.
It's yeast extract. It's a very British thing.
Yeah, it's, and it's sticky, right?
Yeah, it's a brown spread that you put onto buttered toast. Very nice with cheese.
What's it made of?
It's a byproduct of the brewing process. It's a yeast extract.
Okay.
And you either love it or you hate it. So the joke is, you know, it's a very Marmite thing, which basically means it's binary. Simone says that she likes the video about the head of the Charles steering. So that's really cool. For some reason, Charles isn't answering what the Marmite's for. Anyway, that's all cool. Now, my this past week, firstly, I just want to show you Mickey Raviv's photograph of he's coastal rowing into the old port at Jaffa in Israel. And what a lovely view from the ocean that he's got there. Isn't that great?
Yeah, that's a terrific picture. And Jaffa is the oldest port on the Mediterranean.
Marlene knows. There we go. I think I need to take up a bit more coastal rowing. Now, this past week, I have been learning a lot from a new website called The Well HQ, which is set up by some athletes who are also medical and physiology practitioners to help people understand how to train female athletes. And they started talking about something called a court short kit. And I was inspired to get one for our club. And I've decided to do this at my own expense. So here's the basic idea. If your period comes on unexpectedly and you're at the rowing club, you can go and help yourself to what you need from a little box. And in it, I've got tampons, pads, different sizes and shapes. You can probably just see that I've just put it in a plastic box that I bought from the supermarket. And then I've got a little sign here that says, please take what you need because girls and women should be focused on getting stuff done, not being caught short. And I copied that from the ladies from The Well who put that in their gym. I have to confess, I am somewhat nervous of approaching the older white men who run the rowing club from the committee point of view and saying to the president that I think that this would be a good thing to do. So if anyone has any bright ideas about appropriate ways of mentioning this to someone. But if you're inspired yourself to get a court short kit together and make it available in the changing rooms to women in your club, I think it's quite a good thing. And it just shows that, you know, we're looking out for each other.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, sometimes things like that, like you just, it's better just to do it and lead by example, I think.
Well, it wasn't expensive. I got two boxes and it cost me a total of $57, including buying the plastic boxes. So I don't mind being out of pocket to the tune of $57. But the question really is, what happens when it runs short? Who's going to restock it? But
Yes. Or people can make donations and keep it stocked if they would like to help each other in the locker room. I think that's...
Yeah, I hope so. Tanya says, just tell them they will be so embarrassed. Well, I think I'd like to do that face to face. Maybe we could pass it around the table and they could have a look. Ebony says, that's a great idea. I'll definitely put one of these together for our club. Fabulous. Good on you, Ebony. That is great. And yeah, it would be lovely if more people, you know, felt that they could. And yeah, just label it court short kit, put it somewhere really prominently. And yeah, just, you know, even if people have got spares, sometimes it's somewhat embarrassing just having to ask someone, have you got something that you could help me with?
Yes. Well, I think in a place like a club where there's a lot of women in the locker room and people coming in and out, if you've got a relatively, you know, good sized group of people, it makes total sense.
Yeah. Well, we have
just like when there's, you know, or when there's soap or there's hand lotion and shampoo, you know, just things like this. In the locker room, it's also nice when there's some supplies there in case people are in a rush and they didn't bring things with them.
That's a good idea. I don't think we've got spare shampoo. I buy soap. I confess I buy the cheapest white soap I can find. But there's always soap. But it's not so nice washing your hair with soap. Well, no, you can in emergencies. Now, our big topic for the week is the legs to back connection. So this is all about the power phase in the rowing stroke. As we all know, we've got three parts of our body that provide power for rowing: legs, back, and arms. And one of the biggest challenges of learning to row is transitioning from one of those body parts to the next, because it's not a straight stop doing one and start doing the next. There's an overlap. And this makes it hard to learn. And so we thought we'd just do a whole podcast on the legs to back connection. Over to you, Marlene.
Well, I mean, if you think of the legs to the back connection, you have to say, well, first of all, what's the purpose of this? And the purpose is to use your strongest muscles, your legs, first. However, the power of the legs has to be connected to the oar handle to move the oar handle, because we are trying to move the boat past the blades, to move the system past the blades. So when we talk about the term connection, we're talking about the low back, the link between the legs and the upper body, so that when you drive off the foot stretchers, that is moving the oar handle and directly moving the oar handle. Because if they don't work together, someone can drive, if you drive your legs but your oar handle doesn't move, we call that shooting the slide. And you didn't move the handle anywhere. So driving your legs isn't going to really help you move the boat very much. If you move your hands but you don't drive your legs, the person or our sculler is going, or rower is going, to open their body up and move the handle, but they're not going to have any power or body weight behind that because it's not connected to the legs. So initiation needs to go together. Granted, as we get through the drive, the handle may move at a faster speed because it's got to travel more distance compared to the legs. But you're looking at that connection of pushing off the foot stretchers and feeling pressure on your feet, on the blade, and on your handle at the same time, so that everything moves together.
That's a great description. So you can actually check this for yourself. Can you feel pressure on your hand? So can you actually feel on the pads of your fingers here? Look at those terrible blisters that I've got this week.
Oh, dear, yeah.
I'm back in the boat. Look.
Well, that's good, though.
Can you actually feel pressure on the pads of your fingers as they are on the handle? Because as you put pressure on it, you should feel a greater push between the rubber of the handle grip or the wood into your hand. It doesn't matter if it's sweep or sculling. Can you actually feel that you are pushing on the balls of your feet? So I often get to say to people, feel the texture of your socks, the inside of your socks. Can you actually feel that and feel that you're pushing further on those things? So you can actually work out for yourself whether you are feeling that pressure. Now, the concept, go on, sorry.
Oh, no, I was going to say, but, you know, as you said, tuning into this pressure, if you don't feel the pressure in your hands and you feel it in your feet, that's going to give you certain information, and vice versa. So, you know, and we have the pressure on the blade. So try, you know, think about that as sort of a triad there.
Now, the concept of the kinetic chain is an important one to understand, because it's the way physiologists describe and study the rowing stroke. So, Marlene, what is a kinetic chain?
Excuse me. Well, the kinetic chain is essentially how you're linked together. Okay. So in very simple terms, the ankle bone's connected to the shin bone's connected to the knee bone.
I can sing this.
Okay. So it's a mechanical way of looking at how the body moves, how you move from your limbs, your joints, how things flex, open up. And basically, if you look at how your bones are connected, okay, we have a mechanical system of levers connected through our joints. Your bone is connected to bone by ligaments. Okay, so ligaments, think L, long, bone to bone, versus say tendons. Tendons are muscle to bone. So that's the difference between ligaments and tendons. But when they talk about the kinetic chain, it is kind of from a mechanical functional way of looking at the body, how you move, basically. So there are two types, they refer to two types of exercises. There's open versus closed kinetic chain exercises. Okay. And an open kinetic exercise is something like you're working the segment of your body that's the farthest away from you. So you're doing an exercise with your arms, or you're doing an exercise with your legs. However, they are free and not fixed to an object. Okay. And an example of this might be you are lying down on a Swiss ball and you're doing some flies, or you're doing exercises with dumbbells with the upper body, balancing with your back on a Swiss ball. Okay. That's considered an open chain exercise. A closed chain is when your feet or your hands, you're actually connected to the ground or to something firm. So if you were looking at your upper body, an example of the closed chain exercise would be a push-up. And so a push-up is a closed chain because your hands are connected to the ground, and then you're creating the movement by pushing off of this fixed surface versus an unfixed surface, which would be like doing something with dumbbells with your upper body. In your lower body, a closed chain exercise, they are more, think of them as being more functional movements. So a closed chain exercise example for your lower body would be doing a squat. Mm-hmm. In our case, pushing off the foot stretcher. Okay. So if you were doing a squat, you'd be pushing off the floor to pick something up. If it was an open chain exercise, you would be doing a leg press. Okay. A leg press would be more, or like a quadricep extension, you know, sitting in the machine, that's more of an open chain extension. Like if you're sitting on the machine, mm-hmm. and you're lifting your leg up and exercising your quad, whereas if you're pushing against something, it's more of a closed chain exercise.
So rowing is a closed chain kinetic chain exercise because we have an oar. The oar is connected to the water, and so we're grounded. And the point about understanding this is really just to appreciate the different limbs that you're going to bring to the rowing stroke and how you activate each one of them.
Yes, and in the case of our rowing stroke, we've got the oar handle, the oars in the water, we've got the pressure of the foot plate, and we're working off of these points of resistance, if we want to call them that, versus our hands and feet being free and moving through the air to isolate a muscle. In rehabilitation, they can use both types of exercises, but if you wanted to work a muscle in isolation, you might do an open chain exercise, like we said, like, you know, you might do a chest press. If you want to work muscles in a larger muscle group where they have to work in synergy, a more functional movement, then you'd probably aim more towards a closed chain exercise, which is going to be, as I said, the squat or something where you're working in a pattern that involves one muscle group overlapping with another muscle group.
That's really clear. We have got a sponsor for the podcast, and I want to tell you about keeping my brain active. It's really important as I age because I enjoy researching new topics that enlighten, inspire, or just plain feed my curiosity. I find it fun. Can you remember that one professor whose class was so popular that the students queued to get into their lectures? So I'm inviting you to meet One Day University. It's a learning website where over 200 of the most popular professors are sharing their lectures. The teachers come from top schools in the USA, including Harvard, Yale, Columbia, Duke. and classes cover history, politics, art, science, music, psychology, and more. If you're curious about the culinary history of the USA, the science of happiness, or how the Beatles impacted 1960s popular culture, come to onedayu.com/rowingchat, and you can learn online or attend live streamed classes every weekday with live question and answer sessions with your new favorite professors. You can join the fun at onedayu.com/rowingchat with a 14-day free trial, and fees start from $8.95 a month. See you there.
That sounds great.
It does, doesn't it?
Yes.
I want to be the favorite professor.
Yes, you will be, I assure you. Just give us time. Give us time.
Now, the next bit about the legs to back connection that's really important is training your glutes. So your glutes are the muscles in your bum that are the connecting hinge that join your legs to your back. So they are absolutely critical to making this legs to back connection work. But it's really hard to train your glutes. It's really hard to teach people how to activate them. And I'm going to put my hand up here and say, it was not until I learned single sculling that I genuinely started to improve my glute strength. I did years and years of rowing sweep where I do not think I was really using my glutes well. And this is a very pet theory, but I think that is one reason why scullers make good sweepers and why sweepers find it hard to become good scullers, that it's very challenging to learn, but somehow being on your own in a single scull, you work out a few things. And somehow I managed to acquire this skill. How do you train people to activate their glutes, Molly?
Well, that's interesting. I've just never thought about it that way, but just to throw this out here, just now, there may be, when you drive off the foot stretcher, okay, when you drive off the balls of your feet, it's a bit more quads. As you continue that push and you get your whole foot down, you move into the glutes, okay? So there is a transition. And like when we were talking to Volker Nolte about this during the webinar, he said, you know, you don't need to teach when the heels go down, just teach the good push, okay? Because your foot is going to know when it needs to go down, because it needs to maintain and build the pressure off of the foot stretcher. People definitely experience what we call gluteal amnesia. Mm. And as you get older, it can be more difficult to activate those glutes. So it is something that you have to practice, okay? And it's really, as Rebecca says, it's really connected to strength through the leg drive. Strong glutes are the connector of the lower back. Strong glutes help support your lower back so that your leg drive transfers your power to the oar handle. You can do this, first of all, practice it isometrically, okay? So even when you're standing in line in the grocery store, you can squeeze your butt muscles. You can activate your glutes, and you can just isometrically squeeze them and wake them up. When you're driving in your car, you can activate your glutes, and you can do isometric contractions and wake up your glutes. When you're in the boat, what we talk about drive suspension and trying to really load our body weight between the foot stretchers and the oar handle. And in order to do that, you've got to use those glute muscles. So you have to be aware of them being strong and activated, which means kind of not sinking into the seat, so to speak. You know, like if you watch somebody's drive, And you see, you never see, if you watch the center line, I'll watch someone in the boat and I'll watch how they're sitting on the seat. And as they move through the drive, if you see that they just sort of blob into the seat, so to speak, they're not really getting their weight between their feet and their oar handle. If you see them get good suspension, you'll actually see, you'll see their hips kind of stay up a little bit. You know, they'll look like their hips stay up, like they're active on the seat, versus if you see them during the drive and about once they get through the perpendicular point of the oar, you just kind of see the hips drop down. That's when they're not activating their glutes. So that's sort of, that's something that I look for outside the boat to see what's happening on the seat in the boat. And, you know, are they maintaining that drive and working all the way through the leg drive? So kind of from an observational point, that's what we look at. As far as drills, I try to have them really work on keeping the pressure to the foot stretcher, especially as they get into, say, the last third of the leg drive, because often, and keeping that acceleration, because oftentimes that's where a sculler or rower will kind of slack off a bit, is as they get towards the end of the leg drive, they'll stop pushing. And, you know, you want to keep pushing all the way through, because you have to hold the pressure to the oar handle and to the blade all the way through.
Yeah. So one thing to look for, if you suspect that, is if this is my hand is my bent legs, and that it's going to go straight in the rowing stroke, you look for the speed of the legs going down. So imagine I'm pushing down on the knees, and look at how the legs straighten. If it goes fast and then goes slow, you can be sure that they're not continuing that leg drive that Marlene just described. So often that will give you a clue as to whether or not that athlete is continuing to drive their legs and start to recruit their glutes as they get to that last third of the leg drive.
And it could be also how they push off. If somebody pushes off their toes and stays on their toes all the way, they may not recruit those glutes in. So it's just something to look for. But you can train them on land.
Yeah.
And some of the exercises that would work your glutes are things like glute bridges. You know, when you lie down. Yeah. And then you lift up in a bridging motion. That's one. Bulgarian split squats are another one, where you have one foot in front of you and you're squatting down, one knee's going down to the ground and the other knee is forward. That's a split squat. Side squats are another one, where you're actually like doing a squat sideways. Fire hydrants is what you think.
That
you're kneeling down on all fours and you're doing a little fire hydrant action. Like, you know, that's a.
You're going to have to describe that better. I have no clue what you're talking about. What is a fire hydrant? I know you have them in American streets and you can't park in front of them.
Right. Well, like if you're down on all fours and then you're lifting your leg up out to the side and then down.
Oh, it's like a dog cocking its leg to the side.
Why exactly.
Is that called a fire hydrant?
Yeah, I know. It's kind of a funny sort of thing.
That's hilarious.
Also, like using bands around, if you take a band a gigantic rubber band, like an elastic that's big, and you put it around your leg, your knees. And then you do lateral banded walks. So you're walking against that resistance. That's more for like your medial glutes, which is where you put your hands in your pockets. So, you know, and then you've got the big glutes in the back, which more when you do squats, that's going to get that. Or glute bridges when you raise your hips up.
We call those crab walks. So you will often bend your knees and stick your bum out a bit. And then I hold the band either around my knees or my thighs, and you're working laterally against them, and that activates.
Yeah, it's almost like a skating motion, except you're doing it against
sideways. Resistance. 10 steps one way, 10 steps back the other way. Yep.
Or we call them monster walks too. That's another one, but that's a really good way with an elastic to work on glutes. Lunges are good.
Yeah, forward lunges, any sort of lunge. Now, timing the switch from legs to back is critical, because in the rowing stroke, there are two basic ways of making your power: simultaneous and sequential. Simultaneous is when you do your legs and backs together. and then your backs and arms together. And sequential, as it implies, is you do legs, then back, and then arms. How you do that is up to, that is style and is personal preference. We're not going to go into that today, but it's evident that you do need to use all three parts of your body. So when you're actually in your boat and you're rowing, how do you know when to time the changeover from driving with your legs to starting to incorporate your back?
One good source of feedback is, how does the water pressure feel on your blade? And how does your pressure feel against the handle? I think this is one place to start paying attention, because once your blade is loaded and you're starting to drive, you don't want the pressure coming on and off the blade as you go through the drive. And if that transition is from the legs to the body is not smooth, you're going to feel that the blade doesn't feel stable in the water. It's not going to feel like you lock on and then you keep building that consistent pressure through. So I think I like to ask the rowers to start pay attention to how your blade feels when it goes in the water, and then try to make that maintain a really what feels like a constant pressure, even though the boat speed is increasing, what feels like a constant pressure as you drive the legs and as you blend the body in. That's one source of feedback. The other source of feedback, I think, is at the handle, mm-hmm. is making sure that that handle pressure is staying level, but you also have to stay horizontal. And the drive needs to be horizontal. And if the body comes in too early, oftentimes you're going to see the rower lift the handle or lift the body away from the legs. So the handle is not going to be horizontal, and the blade might go deep. So, you know, paying attention to the hand level and, driving, it's difficult to drive the legs all the way to the end and then all of a sudden leverage your back really forcefully on your lower back. I mean, sometimes there is that. And as Rebecca said, this is a style, a coaching style of how separated or how blended it is. But I do think you want to get a good, you want to get a good push on the foot stretcher and have your feet all the way down. And, you're going to be at least a third of the way through the drive before the body starts to open. Some people go a little deeper into the drive before the body opens, but I think you are looking for that even pressure on the blade. What would you say, Rebecca?
That's exactly right. But in order to work out what's right for you, I'm going to suggest that you experiment with some exaggerations. So try rowing with getting your legs all the way straight before you swing your back. And you will notice that pressure variation in the hands, that the oar feels unstable in the water that Marlene described. Then try, do that for like 10 strokes. Then try bringing the back in a little earlier. So get your legs, three quarters of the way down before you swing your back. And make sure that you're in a forward posture with your shoulders very much forward of your hips before you do that. So just, you might, find that you want to make your back swing more dynamic. You might just do a normal leg drive and then just try, don't swing leaning further back, but from your lent forwards to your lent back position. So within those two angled extremes, try moving your back more actively and seeing what that feels like on the handles, what that feels like on the tip of the blade. And you will probably work out where feels about right. You will begin to become alert and attuned to the variations in pressure. You could possibly also observe for yourself whether your blades go deep, whether your handles get higher and lower. And you will be able to try and experiment and find a good midpoint. That's the moment when you then probably want to get someone outside of your boat to video you or to observe you and say, what do you think I am doing? Can you see, that I am getting my back activated. Can you tell me roughly when in the stroke you think I activate my back? And those are good questions to ask. And even if you're asking it of somebody who's not experienced in rowing, you can get them just to film you. Mm-hmm. Three strokes is enough, and then you can go and judge it for yourself.
Yes, absolutely. Because what you're going to look for is, as we talked about, the connection between the seat and the handles. You know, as you drive the legs and swing the back, are you keeping that relationship going? Are you comfortable with the backswing? You know, the hip hinge and swinging the back in the middle of the stroke can be a very foreign movement for people, because there aren't a lot of sports where we're asking you to swing your body weight in a direction where you are not looking. So, so you know, doing a little bit of arms and body only rowing just to isolate the swing, so that you can start to feel like you push the hips and then you open and you swing open. So you're kind of prying the body away from the body and legs apart from each other. And focusing on what that feels like versus like the seat being really loose and slipping and the handle trailing behind you. And again, that's going to change the pressures. Yeah. We've also talked about in the past of looking at your force curve.
That's absolutely right. So if you're training indoors on a rowing machine, you can look at your force curve, and they're reasonably sensitive. If you have the PM5 monitor on the Concept 2, or if you've got an RP3 where they have a real-time curve, which is very sensitive, and you can just experiment with these slightly different ways of rowing and see what you can observe in your own force curve.
Mm-hmm. That's a very good way to do it. So you're looking for a smooth, you know, a smooth line moving up, not a line that has little bumps. If it's got little bumps and plateaus in it, that's sort of showing unequal pressure.
It is,
and,
yeah.
You know, so you want to look for a smooth line and almost like a coming up to a peak. So that's a very good way just to check it out. On a dynamic erg, it's probably maybe a little bit more accurate, because you've also got the foot stretcher is moving just like it is in the boat. You know, the kind of studies have shown that the way you apply your pressure to the foot plate on a dynamic indoor rower is closer to the boat versus a static erg on the floor. But I think for the purpose of learning the sequencing, you can do both.
If you think of your force curve as a bell curve shape, your leg drive takes you very nearly to the top of your peak. The backswing takes you over the peak and around halfway down the downslope, and your arms is just the very, very last little bit. So your arms is around 5% of your total power, and legs and backs, actually, it might be a little more than 5%, but 5 to 10 is really not very much. But you can work that out for yourself. So just watch your force curve, row just legs only, and then add your back and see how much longer the curve gets when you add your back in. And when you activate your glutes, you can make a much longer stroke. Mm-hmm. It's one of the best ways of increasing your stroke, your effective stroke length, is by having a strong gluteal muscle activation that hinges your legs to your back. And although it might be very hard to understand if you haven't ever done this, this is one of the best ways of making your boat go faster. You're recruiting more muscles into the rowing stroke action.
Yes. And the backswing is, you know, adding length. It's adding handle length versus if there's no backswing, you know, that you have your leg length and your arm length, which is going to move the handle a shorter distance than when you add the backswing in, which is, you know, going to improve your time in the water. Okay. So if we're looking at the length, we're talking about improving your time in the water.
Definitely. When you're watching masters rowers at a regatta, one of the main areas where they lose their efficiency and effectiveness is so many masters rowers don't use their backs.
Yep.
It's not that they don't lean forwards to lean back. they are not adding to the boat speed with the back movement. Mm-hmm. And it's a really easy area to coach. So if you're a coach, go and coach some of these things and see the speed improvements you'll get just like almost instantaneously.
Yeah. And sometimes it's really just raising awareness of it, because depending on how experienced your rowers are, they just may not have really thought about it. It emphasizes the importance of preparing your blade and getting the blade in square and solid, because then the blade is going to be a lot more stable and you're going to be a lot more confident putting your body weight on that oar handle. If your blade is not stable in the water, you're not going to feel very confident as you drive your legs. You're not going to feel very confident, like just really swinging on it. So, you know, you've got to work on the blade prep and getting the blade placement so that the blade, you know, the blade will hold all your weight. As long as it's placed properly, it's going to be really secure in the water. So, you know, the body swing is one of the really good benefits of getting the blade placed in the water very securely so you can use your weight.
So there you go. In a nutshell, the legs to back connection. What an episode. Thank you, Molly.
You're welcome. It's fun to go out there and swing on the oar.
So. It is, actually. You like go, rah!
That's your rhythm, right? That's your rhythm, right? It's good rhythm.
It is good rhythm. So this has been Faster Masters Rowing Radio, the show dedicated to masters athletes who want fun, fitness, and confidence in their rowing. You can become a student of the sport by buying a Faster Masters Rowing Program subscription today at fastermastersrowing.com/join. We broadcast once a week, same time each week, 6 p.m. Eastern Time USA on a Thursday, with the exception of the first week of the month, where we are 3 hours earlier for our European listeners so that they get to listen and join us live before they go to bed. And an early warning that our program at the end of October, so the last week in October, in 2 weeks' time, is going to be a questions and answers show. So if you have questions you would like answered, please share them with us. You can find us on YouTube, you can find us on Facebook and on Instagram, and you can message us through the website. Please tell your friends and leave us a review in iTunes if you are so inclined. Till next week. Bye-bye.